Our first speaker, Melissa Kelly, is a doctoral student at UCLA School of Public Health. She's going to talk about her study using the latent class analysis to explore disaster and their impacts. Melissa?
So, thank you. All right, thank you for that introduction. All right, I'm going to be talking about latent class analysis and using it to explore disasters and their impacts. I have no relationships to disclose at this time. This is the research team. It consisted of Linda Bork, Megumi Kano, Michelle Wood, and Dennis Maletti. Disasters are a significant public health problem worldwide. There are hundreds of thousands of deaths, millions adversely affected, and billions can be spent coping with damages. Trend data has clearly indicated an increase in their frequency, thus the potential physical and psychological impacts will continue to be a significant problem. Most studies exploring the effects of disasters are limited to case studies of single events, and the handful of studies that have examined multiple disasters or disaster types only consist of a single impact outcome, which is usually psychological in nature. Thus, our ability to generalize about disasters and their impacts is limited. Disaster research, in a lot of ways, can be described as a methodological disaster in and of itself. There is no consensus on the definition of disasters. We have emergencies, crisis, catastrophes. I mean, what do we include as disasters? I mean, are complex emergencies considered? Can we include infectious disease? I mean, it runs the gamut, and everyone has different opinions on what it should be. This has led to multiple classification schemes. There is no standardized methodology for collecting disaster data. There is no single institution that collects, monitors, or maintains disaster data. And disaster data can reflect bias depending on the intent behind the collection and reporting, so it's something we need to be aware of when we're looking at it. So the aim of this analysis was to conduct an inductively derived topology to classify disaster impacts, to use latent class analysis to identify impact subtypes, and to use LCA with covariates to identify variations in impact subtypes by disaster types. A little bit on the survey sample. It was a nationally representative random digit dial household survey conducted between April 2007 and February 2008. Interviews were completed with 3,300 respondents with an overall response rate of 0.35, and respondents were offered an incentive of a $20 gift card to Target or Barnes & Noble or a $20 charitable donation to one of three organizations. The measures that I will be exploring today involve disaster experience, which was derived from an open-ended question that took me about 9 months to code. And then the impact data was obtained from five dichotomous yes-no questions that looked at finances, property, peace of mind, trust in government, and health. The analysis, I first restructured the data set because I was interested in disasters as a unit of analysis, and it was originally collected as respondents as a unit of analysis. The disaster data then was content analyzed and post-coded in Excel just because it's way easier to manage, and I can color code it and make it beautiful and do things with that. And then it was imported into SPSS. I did some descriptive statistics with SPSS, and then I actually had to use SPSS, go to Stata, and then to M+, just because of issues between going back and forth between SPSS and M+. So here's a little overview of latent class analysis. LCA is a multivariate technique commonly used to classify cases into a set of latent classes based on categorical indicator variables. Covariates can be added to a model to use as predictors of class membership. It enables researchers to focus attention on a set of types identified in the analysis instead of considering each variable individually or all of their possible combinations. And here's just a few concepts and terms just for people that aren't familiar with this technique. So latent classes are latent because they are not observable directly, but rather they are identified based on a function of set of manifest indicators. The number of latent classes are derived through an iterative process using goodness of fit or bootstrapping. And you're looking for both parsimony in the model as well as interpretability. And then odds ratios, a number of things can be used, but I use odds ratios, and they're measures of the effect size of the covariates in the model. They are calculated by running multinomial regression with the latent class variable as dependent, using each covariate in turn as independent. And then here's a few things that you'll see in the presentation, which I'll go over a little bit later in terms of posterior probabilities. posterior probabilities for a given observation indicate the probability of that observation being classified into a given class. There's marginal probabilities, the probability of one variable taking a specific value irrespective of the values of others. And then conditional probability. These are the probabilities for each latent class that a member of that class will display a given value on a manifest variable. And just some assumptions to go over. LCA does not assume linearity, normal distribution, or homogeneity of variance. Latent class analysis is appropriate when the dependent variable is truly categorical. And usually people use cluster analysis if you have continuous data. And then within each latent class, observations are assumed to be independent, which is called conditional independence. So results. I'm sorry, the first two slides have some small print, and I apologize in advance because it's never interesting or fun to see when you first have it. So this is just something to show about what our sample descriptions look like. Because respondents are not used as the unit of analysis, it's more just for information, just so you guys can see what our sample looked like. We had, when we stratified it, we based it on geographic strata because we were interested in high-risk areas for terrorism versus low-risk as well, and that's what we use for the weighted sample, and it's comparable to the U.S. Census projections for the weighted sample. And then for the unweighted sample, we were interested in differences based on race, ethnicity, which is comparable to the census projections, and I used unweighted data for this. And this is the worst. I'm sorry for the very small print, but I just wanted to show you some of the different disaster types that were reported. There are over 5,000 disaster types or disasters that were reported. Respondents could say that they were affected by zero disasters or up to nine. And for each of the events, they named a specific event, which I coded. And then they were asked about the five different impact measures. And so the top, in terms of just overall disaster types, were hurricanes, terrorism, and earthquakes. And just a little more information as well. September 11th and Hurricane Katrina were mentioned as the most frequent specific disaster types, which doesn't surprise us considering the recency and the time period when the data was collected. In terms of the impact measures, 33% affected finances, 28% affected property, 83% affected peace of mind, 36% affected trust in government, and 15% affected health. Okay. So for this slide here, I used an iterative process that was used to derive a three-class model that had a good fit. I used multiple random starts to counter the potential effect of local minima using the maximum likelihood estimates. And these were the three class solution that came out. And you can see that a one is a perfect score, and so that they did classify nicely. Here, for the marginal probabilities, it shows that about 44% of all of the cases fell into class one, about 17% fell into class two, and about 39% fell into class three. And then from the LCA and from theoretical considerations, a substantive interpretation of class membership was obtained. So for class one, you can see that peace of mind and trust in government were the ones that came out, and it was interpreted as psychological distress and a loss in trust in government. And for class two, you can see finances, property, peace of mind, and that was interpreted as a physical loss and psychological distress. And for class three, it was just peace of mind that came out, and so it was only psychological distress. Okay. Covariates were added to predict class membership based on disaster type. I actually used mixture modeling, which is a form of LCA due to the limitations of the program, because I had over 5,300 disaster events reported, and then I had over 80 different types of disasters that were reported. The program just was not robust enough to handle that. So what I did, even though that it was exploratory, we wanted to comment a little bit on how disasters are actually classified. So we used the classification of natural disasters, which were the reference group, and then we had conflict-based disasters and human systems disasters, and we looked at. And so the odds of conflict-based disasters were 75 times the odds of natural disasters to have a class one impact pattern, which was psychological distress and loss of trust in government. And then for human systems disasters, that was four times the odds. And then the odds for conflict disasters were 7.5 times the odds of natural disasters. And for human systems disasters, it was 1.2 times the odds for having a class two, which was a psychological distress, which was psychological distress and physical loss. So some conclusions. Approximately 75% of those surveyed reported an effect from at least one disaster in their lifetime. The types of disasters reported were very diverse. The most common, again, were hurricanes, terrorism, floods, earthquakes, and tornadoes. And most respondents reported an impact on their peace of mind. The LCA model found that conflict-based and human systems disasters were more likely to have an impact with psychological distress and loss in trust in government than natural disasters. This is consistent with studies on mental health impacts of disasters, where human systems disasters tend to produce higher rates of psychological impairment. And disasters involving intentional actions can yield higher rates of psychological impact. This is particularly due to the shock and vulnerability of these situations. And then conflict-based and human systems disasters were slightly more likely than natural disasters to have a physical and psychological impact. And studies looking at the bombings during World War II through Mile Island and Chernobyl found that there's potential delayed health effects and which can cause environmental contamination, which can cause anxiety in survivors. So the application of LCA to examine disasters and their impacts is a novel approach in disaster research. This study is unique in that it examines multiple types of disasters and several different types of impacts. So understanding what types of impacts affect people and how they affect them is instrumental in their management and mitigation. And some of the major limitations has to do with how we conceptualize disasters and the impacts. If these aren't really these weren't considered true disasters, or these aren't even important impacts, then this work could be potentially considered meaningless. And then the definitional criteria could also limit our comparison with other disaster research, because again, people consider different things as disasters. So, and just to acknowledge, this was funded by DHS and by the National Science Foundation. That's it.
Questions?
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Cook.
Hello.
Hi. I've never used LCA, so I'm not sure about what to go on, but I know if I did a depression and I ended up with an odds ratio of 75, I'd be very concerned about my model. Mm-hmm. Is that a similar concern with LCA, or maybe a separation or something, strength like that going on, the odds ratio that works?
Okay. I'm not a statistician, so when I had a consultant help me with this analysis, that was not a concern they brought up, but that's something that I would be hesitant to initially, it would be suspect. It was run multiple times and in different fashions, and it did come up that way, and the p-value was significant, so we accepted it as something that was true. So, but sorry, I couldn't answer your question any better than that.
But the larger the odds ratio is, actually, the greater the discriminative power of the latent classes, and it implies. So it's from a different perspective.
Okay.
If you are doing a regular regression, say logistic regression, you've got an exceptionally large odds ratio, there might be a red flag.
Okay.
I do have a question about, maybe I missed your presentation. Why you chose just use the actual sample rather than the weighted methods?
We decided to use the weighted sample because we were interested in doing further research down the line and looking at race ethnicity potentially and how it differentiated in terms of impacts. So it was just in terms of setting it up that we felt that that was a better way of looking at things. And because the unit of analysis was also the disaster event, when I was talking with the consultant, they felt that the weighting wasn't necessary because we were changing the unit of analysis.
But the original data we collected based on random dial household survey, there is a large body of literature emerging about that method or problems, increasing problems of that problem, because a lot of households do not have a phone.
Yeah.
I just wonder if your survey included the mobile
numbers. No, they did not include cell phone numbers. This is definitely a problem in our field. The last couple of years, there's been some large surveys, particularly CHIS in California, that has had the money to be able to look at cell phone-only households and to see whether or not they are different. And data is coming out that the younger generation, including myself, even as a first responder, I am a cell phone-only household, which is bad. And, depending on your situation, but that younger people and also people of lower socioeconomic status are also tend to be lower, only cell phone only households. So it is a problem that is widespread in telephone surveys, and it's something that we need to address. But considering how expensive they are right now, just to even get these 3,300 people, it was over $400,000. And I don't know what the price tag is to add cell phones, but it's significant because they have to consider compensating the people for their minutes because it is more expensive than calling someone on the landline. But I can't really speak too much to that.
Nate.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting things that we were looking at. The question was vague intentionally. It was asked, what disasters have affected you? And we measured a whole bunch of other things, whether or not it was in their community, what year it was, and their overall effect. Because we were, some other analysis that I did on my master's thesis, this is just a very small portion of it, was looking at like whether people have, you know, vicariously experienced disasters. And that was part of the reason why 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina, you know, became very popular. And a lot of those people, over half of those people, did not live in the community where the disaster was. So it can affect you psychologically, and all of the measures in terms of like psychological impact and trust in government were the ones that, you know, tended to affect people that were not actually living in the community. We did have a handful of people that said their finances and property had been affected, but they didn't live in that community. And the assumption that we took was that they might have had some type of property or financial investment, you know, say in New York City or something when 9/11 happened. It was particular for that subset of people that said 9/11 that were not living in New York but did have some type of actual physical impact. Does that answer your question? Okay.
It's probably obvious, but in Red Cross's group, psychological care is almost paramount.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is, and a majority of the disaster research has looked at psychological impact because, as I mean, you can see, like, it's one of the biggest impacts people experience. Anything else? All right, thank you.
Did you try, say, you just showed the three classes. I just wonder if you started with fewer or more classes or just
We started from the first class, and I didn't present those results, but in hindsight, I probably should have, at least from a technical aspect. Yeah, we started with the first a one model, and then we went to a 2, 3, and 4. And at 4, the model fit was only slightly better, but the probability started to fix. And from a substantive interpretation, a 3 model or a 3 class model was better. So that's why we chose the 3 model or the 3 class model over a 4 class model.
Do you think it's necessary to validate that three-class model with some separate or independent data rather than the data based on which you created the three-class model?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be an important approach. I think we should try to validate as much data as we can, but unfortunately in the disaster field, we don't have that type of data. This is actually the first study that's really been able to look at multiple types of disasters and multiple impacts. So hopefully someone can validate our results.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks.